Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
This is sending a terrible message across Milwaukee and across the country that ICE officials and FBI could just show up to a court and, using an administrative warrant, attempt to disrupt due process. The message that this is sending to immigrants on any sort of visa status is terrible.
The Trump administration escalates attacks on judges and immigrants. On Friday, FBI agents arrested Milwaukee County Judge Hannah Dugan on charges of obstructing justice and concealing an immigrant from arrest as federal agents waited in the courthouse hallway. We'll speak with two people who know the judge well. But first, three U.S. citizen children were deported Friday, including a four-year-old boy with fourth-stage cancer, who is actively receiving treatment here, but was deported with his mother and seven-year-old sister. Another two-year-old was deported with her mother. We'll get the latest. Then Martin O'Malley, former head of the Social Security Administration, has issued a dire warning that Social Security could collapse due to sweeping Trump cuts.
Elon Musk, keep your hands off of Social Security.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. At least 68 African migrants have been killed in a U.S. airstrike in Yemen. Houthi media outlets report the U.S. bombed a detention center in the western province of Sada. Another 47 migrants were injured in the attack. A separate U.S. attack killed at least 8 people in the capital, Sana'a. The Pentagon says it's carried out 800 strikes on Yemen since March 15th, after Houthi fighters vowed to resume targeting ships in the Red Sea in an attempt to pressure Israel to end its war and blockade on Gaza. In Gaza, Israeli attacks have killed 23 Palestinians so far today, after Israel forces killed at least 53 people Sunday, including 6 who were killed when Israel bombed a cafe near the Nuseirat and Burej refugee camps. Meanwhile, the World Food Program's announced it's run out of food to distribute in Gaza due to Israel's two-month-long blockade. Earlier today, the International Court of Justice began a 5-day hearing on Israel's obligations to provide aid to Gaza. Palestinian envoy Amar Hijazi accused Israel of using humanitarian aid as weapons of war.
That's really the heart of why Palestine and over 40 other states are addressing the court today. It is not about the number of aid trucks Israel is or is not allowing into the occupied Palestinian territory, especially Gaza. It is not about Israel destroying the fundamentals of life in Palestine while it blocks UN and other humanitarians from providing life-saving aid to the population. It is about Israel unraveling fundamental principles of international law, including their obligations under the UN Charter. It is about Israel turning Palestine, and particularly Gaza, into a mass grave for Palestinians and those coming to their aid.
On Sunday, Israeli fighter jets bombed Beirut's southern suburbs again. The UN and Lebanese officials condemned the strike, with Lebanon's president warning Israel's actions are undermining stability in the region. In Canada, police have charged a man with murder for the car-ramming death of 11 people during a music festival in Vancouver Saturday evening. It took place during the annual Lapu-Lapu festivities, which celebrate the Filipino community and culture. The victims ranged in age from 5 to 65. Dozens were wounded. This is a local community member.
It's kind of like you can be strong and weak at the same time. And you know, the efforts with gathering with not just the Filipino community, but everybody. And if you've been to a Filipino event or organizer, there is a saying called isang baksak. And it means when one falls, we all fall. But again, when one rises, we all rise.
No motive for the mass killing has been identified, but authorities say the suspect, 30-year-old Kaiji Adam Low, has a history of mental health-related interactions with Vancouver police. The tragedy came just 2 days ahead of high-stakes snap elections in Canada. Voters today will decide between the ruling Liberal Party, now led by Justin Trudeau's successor, Prime Minister Mark Carney, and Pierre Poilievre, who leads the Conservatives. He had been leading in the polls when Trudeau stepped down in January, but Carney's defiant response to Trump's tariffs and his threats to annex Canada have helped propel the Liberals' chances of staying in power. On Saturday, hundreds of thousands of mourners gathered at the Vatican for the funeral of Pope Francis, who died last week at the age of 88. During the eulogy, Cardinal Giovanni Battista remembered Pope Francis as a pope of the people and a peacemaker.
Di fronte all'infuriare di tante guerre di questi anni.
Faced with the raging wars of recent years, with their inhuman horrors and countless deaths and destruction, Pope Francis insistently raised his voice, imploring peace and calling for reason and honest negotiation to find possible solutions. War, he said, is only the death of people and the destruction of homes, hospitals, and schools.
More than 50 world leaders attended the Pope's funeral, including President Trump and Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky. The two met at the Vatican prior to the funeral. The meeting came a day after Trump's special envoy, Steve Witkoff, met with Russian President Vladimir Putin at the Kremlin. On Sunday, Trump expressed disappointment with Putin for continuing to attack Ukraine while refusing to agree to a U.S. broker deal to end the war in Ukraine. Earlier today, Putin announced a unilateral 3-day ceasefire in Ukraine beginning May 8th. On Sunday, Russia fired nearly 150 drones at Ukraine, killing at least 4 people. Meanwhile, North Korea's confirmed for the first time it had sent combat troops to fight alongside Russian forces. The Trump administration's escalating its attack on judges. On Friday, FBI agents arrested a county judge in Milwaukee, Hannah Dugan, who was charged with obstruction and concealing an individual from arrest. The FBI accused her of allegedly helping an undocumented immigrant avoid arrest inside a Wisconsin courthouse. The judge's arrest was widely criticized. Wisconsin Democratic Senator Tammy Baldwin said, quote, "This action fits into the deeply concerning pattern of this president's lawless behavior and undermining courts and Congress's checks on his power," unquote. The FBI director, Kash Patel, is facing accusations he broke DOJ policy by posting a photo online of Judge Dugan in handcuffs. On Saturday, protesters rallied in Milwaukee to protest the Trump administration's crackdown on immigrants and the arrest of Judge Dugan.
We are out here today with a message for the FBI, for the DOJ, for President Trump himself. And that message is, drop the charges, stop the raids, stop the deportations. We are also out here with a message for Judge Hannah Dugan. And that message is, we have your back.
In related news, federal agents in New Mexico have arrested a former judge, Jose Luis Cano, and his wife. They've been accused of tampering with evidence linked to a former tenant who the government claims is a member of a Venezuelan gang. In other immigration news, the Trump administration's deported to Honduras 3 U.S. citizen children, including a 4-year-old boy who's actively receiving treatment for a rare form of stage 4 cancer. The boy was removed with a 7-year-old sister who's also a U.S. citizen and their mother. In a separate case, the U.S. deported a 2-year-old U.S. citizen with her mother. In that case, U.S. District Judge Terry Dowdy said the girl was sent away, quote, with no meaningful process. The judge was Trump appointed. Meanwhile, ICE has conducted a number of high-profile immigration raids. In Florida, ICE worked with local officials to detain nearly 800 people. Meanwhile, in Colorado Springs, ICE agents raided a nightclub and made over 100 arrests this weekend. In other immigration news, protesters rallied outside the Charles Schulz Airport in Santa Rosa, California, Saturday to protest Avalo Airlines, which recently signed a deal to work with ICE on deportation flights. In a major reversal, the Trump administration's restored the ability of thousands of international students to study in the United States, at least for now. The Trump administration had been sued at least 65 times for terminating the status of students in a database called SEVIS, the Student and Exchange Visitor Information System. It's unclear how many students may have already left the country after the government changed their status. ABC reports some of the targeted students had supported pro-Palestine protests, but many had not. At least 46 people have died after a massive explosion at one of Iran's main ports Saturday. The blast injured over 1,000 people. Iranian authorities have not said yet what caused the blast. In January, the Financial Times reports ships carrying missile fuel were headed to the port from China. The blast occurred as the U.S. and Iran were holding a third round of talks over Iran's nuclear program. Indian authorities have detained at least 1,500 people in India-administered Kashmir and razed the homes of suspected Kashmiri militants as fears mount over a larger conflict between India and Pakistan following the massacre last week of 26 people in the resort town of Pahalgam. India has accused the Pakistani government of backing the perpetrators of the massacre, but Islamabad has rejected any involvement. Soldiers from India and Pakistan have continued to exchange gunfire along the barrier separating Kashmir between the two nuclear-armed nations. The Sudan Doctors Network reports at least 31 people, including children, were executed by the paramilitary rapid support forces in Omdurman in what the group called a war crime and a crime against humanity. Omdurman is the sister city to the capital, Khartoum, which the Sudanese army reclaimed control over last month after 2 years of a devastating civil war. Separately, at least 11 people were killed in an RSF drone attack Friday at a displacement camp in River Nile State. Meanwhile, the UN reports at least 480 civilians were killed in Sudan's North Darfur over the two-week period starting April 10th, though the actual number is expected to be much higher. The UN also reports widespread sexual violence, including during the deadly attack on the Zamzam displacement camp between April 11th and 13th. Many rape victims are children. Numerous deaths have also been caused by hunger, shortages of water, or lack of medical care. The UN's described Sudan as the world's worst humanitarian crisis. Protests continued Sunday in New York over a visit by Israel's far-right security minister Itamar Ben-Gvir, who was once convicted for incitement to racism and support for a terrorist organization. On multiple occasions, supporters of Ben-Gvir attacked protesters and bystanders while chanting death to Arabs in Hebrew. On Thursday, a mob of over 100 men surrounded and attacked a Brooklyn woman who lived nearby after they assumed she was a pro-Palestinian protester. In Los Angeles, student activists at Occidental College ended their hunger strike Friday after the school's administrators called the Los Angeles police and campus security to violently crack down on peaceful protesters outside the inauguration of Occidental President Tom Strittakis. Students had been demanding Occidental protect its students from immigration authorities and renounce any ties to Israel's war on Gaza. The hunger strikers say Occidental has agreed to certain measures supporting immigrant and international students. In a setback for press freedom, Attorney General Pam Bondi has rescinded a Biden-era policy that aimed to protect journalists in most cases from being forced to hand over their phone records in leak investigations. In a memo, Bondi described the conduct of government leakers as treasonous. In other media news, longtime 60 Minutes correspondent Scott Pelley rebuked CBS's parent company Paramount at the end of Sunday night's broadcast of 60 Minutes. This came days after the show's top producer, Bill Owens, resigned, saying he no longer could make independent decisions about the show. This is a part of Scott Pelley's remarks.
stories we pursued for 57 years are often controversial. Lately, the Israel-Gaza war and the Trump administration. Bill made sure they were accurate and fair. He was tough that way. But our parent company, Paramount, is trying to complete a merger. The Trump administration must approve it. Paramount began to supervise our content in new ways. None of our stories has been blocked, but Bill felt he lost the independence that honest journalism requires.
Expelled Republican Congressmember George Santos was sentenced Friday to more than 7 years in prison for wire fraud and aggravated identity theft. The disgraced former New York Republican Congressmember was ousted from the House in 2023 after less than a year in office. His brief political career was defined by numerous fabrications about his personal and professional life and campaign finance fraud. And Virginia Giuffre, an outspoken survivor of sex trafficking by Jeffrey Epstein, has died by suicide at age 41. She was the first survivor to come out publicly against Epstein, as well as his co-conspirator, Ghislaine Maxwell. She also pursued Prince Andrew for sexually assaulting her when she was 17. The disgraced prince was forced to step away from his royal duties in Britain and settled with Giuffre in 2022. In a statement, Giuffre's family said, quote, Virginia was a fierce warrior in the fight against sexual abuse and sex trafficking. She was the light that lifted so many survivors, they said. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. As President Trump marks 100 days since returning to office this week, protests have continued nationwide against his mass deportations and rising concerns of due process violations. On Friday, the Trump administration deported three U.S. citizen children to Honduras, including a four-year-old boy who is actively receiving treatment for a rare form of stage 4 cancer. The boy and his 7-year-old sister, who's also a U.S. citizen, were deported along with their undocumented mother. That same day, another child with U.S. citizenship, a 2-year-old girl, was also sent to Honduras with her mother, who's pregnant, and her undocumented 11-year-old sibling. In that case, U.S. District Judge Terry Doughty, who's a Trump appointee, said the girl was deported, quote, with no meaningful process, unquote. The judge added, quote, I've never seen anything like it. There is just no good faith interpretation for what happened to these children, the Trump-appointed judge said. The two mothers and their children were detained last week after attending routine check-ins with Immigration and Customs Enforcement in Louisiana. Lawyers for both families say the mothers were coerced into taking their U.S. citizen children with them when they were deported. In the case of the 2-year-old girl, her father's still in the United States. A federal judge in Louisiana raised concerns about Trump officials removing her from the country against the wishes of her father. The mothers are reportedly prohibited from communicating with other family members or their lawyers after they were detained, and their relatives did not know of their whereabouts until the mothers arrived in Honduras. The cases have further raised questions of the harmful impacts of Trump's anti-immigrant policies will have on mixed-status families in the U.S. The Brookings Institution Center for Migration Studies estimates nearly 5 million U.S. citizen children have at least one undocumented parent. For more, we go to Gracie Willis, an attorney with the National Immigration Project representing the 2-year-old U.S. citizen girl who was deported from Louisiana early Friday morning. Gracie Willis, welcome to Democracy Now! Can you first describe what happened to your client? And then we'll go on to the 4-year-old boy suffering fourth stage cancer.
Yes, good morning, Amy. Thank you so much for having me. What happened is that in the early morning hours on Friday, the United States government, after having detained U.S. citizen children, flew them out of the country with no eyes on these families. We have two families here, as you mentioned, and there are really striking similarities between these families and what they went through. In both, there were sort of two stories unfolding simultaneously. There was the outside and the inside. Outside, there were lawyers, loved ones, family members who were persistently trying to find these families and get contact with them. The asks were really simple. Where are they and can we speak with them? Inside, both of the mothers had the same request. Both of the mothers were trying to get in touch with anyone, a lawyer, family members, who could help them either figure out their immigration cases or help take care of their children. In both cases, ICE was speaking to both parties, telling the same lies that prevented communication between the mothers and the people who were trying to assist them outside. And this was to achieve ICE's ultimate aim, which was to send these parents and their children out of the country on a flight out of a rural airport under the cover of early morning hours without any access.
So I want to go to CBS's Face the Nation, where Trump's so-called border czar, Tom Homan, claimed there were no due process violations when your client, a two-year-old U.S. citizen, was deported to Honduras with her mom.
I'm not aware of the specific case, but no U.S. citizen child was deported. Deported means you got to be deported by the immigration judge. We don't deport U.S. citizens.
The mother was deported along with the children.
The children aren't deported. The mother chose to take the children with her. When you enter the country illegally, and you know you're here illegally, and you choose to have your citizen child, that's on you. That's not on this administration. If you choose to put your family in that position, that's on them. But having a U.S. citizen child after you enter this country illegally is not a get-out-of-jail-free card. It doesn't make you immune from our laws.
And this is the Secretary of State, Marco Rubio, being questioned on NBC's Meet the Press, defending the Trump administration's decision to support U.S. citizen children.
Deport. If someone's in this country unlawfully, illegally, mm-hmm. that person gets deported. If that person is with a two-year-old child or has a two-year-old child and says, I want to take my child with me, well, then what? You have two choices. You can say, yes, of course you can take your child, whether they're a citizen or not, because it's your child. Or you can say, yes, you can go, but your child must stay behind. And then your headlines would read, U.S. holding hostage, two-year-old, four-year-old, seven-year-old, while mother deported. So the mother, the parents make that choice. I imagine those three U.S. citizen children have fathers here in the United States. Yes. They can stay with their father. That's up to their family to decide where the children go. Children go with their parents. Parents decide where their children go. Right. The U.S. deported their mothers who were illegally in America.
So that's the U.S. Secretary of State, Gracie Willis. The parents get to decide, he said. Can you respond to both him and Tom Homan?
Absolutely. First of all, whether or not these were technically deportations is beside the point. The point is that these children were taken without any choice by their caregivers or them out of the country by ICE, which is an immigration agency. In terms of the parents' choice, Secretary Rubio's comments are incredibly misleading and disingenuous. At no point did these parents have any choice. They were not offered a choice. What do you want for your children? They weren't offered the kind of opportunity to speak with each other and make what would have been a very difficult decision, but one that two parents are entitled to make together about what's in the best interest of their family and what's in the best interest of their children. These mothers were told, your children will be deported with you. In our case, the government filed what was purported to be a handwritten note by our client's mother that said, I will bring my child with me. That's not a statement of wish. It's not a statement of desire, of choice. It's a statement that she was told, and she was told to write.
So at this point, what happens? I mean, it's very interesting that you have the judge, Judge Doughty, Trump appointed, who said there was no due process here.
At this point, the first thing that the families need to do is process what they've been through, the trauma they've been through, and attend to the safety and health of the family. There are safety and security concerns for some members of the family in Honduras, and so the families are making sure that they are somewhere safe. Secondly, attending to the health of the mother who's pregnant, who's in the early stages of a pregnancy, who's been through a significant trauma, ensuring that she and her unborn child are as well as possible, and attending to the health and well-being of the four-year-old who desperately needs medication and to continue treatment for his cancer.
Gracie, I want to ask you about this four-year-old boy. Mm-hmm. He has fourth stage rare form of cancer. He is in the midst of his treatment. He is deported out of the country without medication. Can you explain his case, though you are not officially representing this U.S. citizen?
That's correct. We're not attorneys on that case, but we're working closely with the attorneys representing that family. This family was brought into detention less than 24 hours before the plane took off in the mid-morning of on Thursday. And the attorney who's working with that family was actually with them at the ICE appointment where they were checking in. The kids were ready for school. They were expecting to go to school later that day. The family was taken into custody, asked for communication with their lawyer who was outside, and were denied that. That attorney filed what's called an administrative stay of removal, which is a request for ICE to just temporarily halt any deportation in the interest of something happening. And in this case, the lawyer requested the opportunity to file paperwork, complicated paperwork, with the court to provide immigration options to the mother, and especially to allow this four-year-old to continue treatment. The attorney filed paperwork with ICE explaining what this child's medical situation was, explaining the diagnosis, and didn't receive any kind of a response until the family was already on a plane on Friday morning.
And finally, it seems important to the Trump administration to keep maintaining that these kids, the child with four-stage rare cancer, the two-year-old, the seven-year-old, were not deported. They were simply attached to their mothers who were deported. Can you explain the difference between talking about deported and removed when we're talking about U.S. citizens?
Absolutely. We're in a situation with these two cases where we almost don't have the right word for it. ICE has the authority to deport people who are deportable, who are removable, whether that's because of finding of a judge or because somebody has accepted something called voluntary departure, anything that relates to somebody who's not a citizen of the United States and is either inadmissible to the United States or deportable from the United States. We don't really have great language around what it is to have an immigration agency send U.S. citizen people out of the country without any access to any way to contest that or express the option to stay in the United States.
Gracie Willis will closely follow these cases. Thanks so much for being with us from Austin, Texas, attorney with the National Immigration Project, representing the two-year-old U.S. citizen who was deported from Louisiana early Friday morning to Honduras. When we come back, the Trump administration escalates its attack on judges. On Friday, FBI agents arrested a Milwaukee judge. Stay with us. Lines by Novo Amor. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. We look now at how the Trump administration is escalating its attacks on judges. On Friday, FBI agents arrested a county judge in Milwaukee, Judge Hannah Dugan, and charged her with obstructing justice and concealing an individual from arrest. The FBI accuses her of helping an undocumented immigrant leave her courtroom in her Wisconsin courthouse April 18th to avoid arrest by agents waiting in the hallway. That day, a Mexican immigrant named Eduardo Flores Ruiz was before her in a hearing on battery charges he faced stemming from an argument over loud music with his roommate, the roommate's girlfriend, and her cousin. Flores Ruiz had been working in the U.S. for about 12 years as a cook in Milwaukee after he was first deported in 2013. The day before the hearing, an immigration judge had issued a warrant for his arrest. After he left Judge Dugan's courtroom, agents reportedly saw Flores Ruiz walking down the hallway to the elevator and leave the courthouse. They arrested arrested him minutes later outside. Judge Dugan's arrest just this past Friday came a week after all this unfolded, has drawn massive backlash across the country. Democratic Senator Tammy Baldwin of Wisconsin said, quote, this action fits into the deeply concerning pattern of this president's lawless behavior and undermining courts and Congress's checks on his power, unquote. FBI Director Kash Patel is facing accusations he broke DOJ policy by posting a photo online of Judge Dugan in handcuffs. On Saturday, protesters rallied outside the FBI building in St. Francis, Wisconsin, to protest the Trump administration's crackdown on immigrants and the arrest of Judge Dugan.
And to do what she did?